Today is Monday, May 3rd, 2021, and this is the business session of the Elizabeth School District Board of Directors meeting. It is 6:01 p.m. We get roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Here.
Director Frumpeller?
Here.
Director Gutenberg?
Here.
Director Heinz?
Present.
Director Carter?
He's not here today.
Absent.
Would you please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, up first we have our education showcase with EMS Principal Pam Eschie. Thank you for coming in, Pam.
No, thank you.
Especially in the lovely weather.
Yeah. Wonderful.
This is her last EMS update.
I know.
In the history of MSTs.
Last EMS update.
Yes.
Bittersweet.
Yes.
So before I start with the slide presentation and just going over some of the data that we've collected through MAPS and just some of the things that have been taking place at Elizabeth Middle School since late fall and to kind of up to today, some different things. I did want to share a letter that I received from my eighth grade language arts teacher, Ellen Lewis. One of her students, Amaya Tunstill, who's an eighth grader, is going to have her poem. Congratulations, your poem has been selected for a publication in the Young American Poetry Digest.
Wow, that's
so
great.
That's quite an accomplishment. I don't know the last time we had that happen with some of our kids, so I didn't see the poem, but it's something we are ordering a book for the school. We'll order a book for the students so that they have that for themselves, and that should get here sometime next school year.
That's impressive.
Great.
That's awesome.
That is
great. Pretty amazing. So
yes,
I just wanted to share that little piece of information with you all.
Great job with the school, the teachers.
Yeah, no, and I'll talk a little bit about teachers when we get toward the end of this. I know you can't see a lot of the numbers on this, but I think what's important when we talk about MAP scores and how we test in the middle school, we test three times. We test in the fall, the winter, and in the springtime. So this is an overview of, and I'll go through several of these, but I think what gives us a really good indicator of what this is are the colors there. Okay, it shows our low students are in red, so the number we have there to our low average being orange, to our average being yellow, and our high average being green to our high students, and this one would be in eighth grade science. So when we look at just our spring scores, we can see that our students did fairly well in some of the tests for NWEA or their MAP scores. I also did this for language usage. You can kind of see the same areas as our students progress through the different prompts for writing. Really trying to focus, yeah. You know, the yellow or the orange and red kids, we want to try to really focus some strategies there and pull them up. And in eighth grade, they're doing a pretty good job, and I've got some specific information I'll read from the teachers as they have gone through, and this is language arts reading, kind of the same pattern as we go through with fewer students in the red area to, we've got quite a few high students that are listed in the blue as we go through these different reports, and then this last one is math. Okay, math is one of the areas that, as I was reading about NWEA MAP scores, one area that NWEA felt like students would really lose some ground based on remote learning, COVID, and being a year and a half for a lot of districts, or a year and a quarter for a lot of districts being out of school. They really felt that math was an area where students would be impacted the most. And you know, we can see that maybe we have a few more reds, but we still have quite a few blue and green and yellow kids in there that help make up those scores. In our reading area, 117 students were tested. 16 students did not make 1 year's growth, so if they're looking at, or 4 points on a RIT score, which is 14% of our students, and out of 117 students, 48 students grew more than 2 years' growth, which is 8 points, and that's 41%. Additionally, there were 4 students who moved 15 plus points between tests from fall to winter and from winter to spring. So in eighth grade reading, they were right on it, and that, you know, just goes to show that in-person instruction really matters for kids and being in school. When we look at, gone through seventh grade, kind of looking at the same thing, we have our science, seventh grade science, a lot of kiddos in the blue, okay, really, really producing high in science. Language usage, you know, we don't have a lot of kids. We have some in writing, revised text and purpose for audience. Maybe if you work on some of those kids and strategies to help them with those items. We look at reading. Now we have a little few more kids in reading, and I'll give an explanation for some of this on why they believe that happened as we look at NWEA. And then math for seventh grade. More math kids in here probably lost some ground in seventh grade than they did in eighth grade. Fewer high students in this area, and really need to work on that red and orange area to try to get these kids to improve. So this would be a focus area, I would think, for next year, is trying to look at some strategies that will help these kids gain some ground maybe in eighth grade when they go into MAP testing. For seventh grade MAPs, I have 79% of the students showed growth over a year. Okay, she didn't give me the exact number or the number of points as Ms. Lewis did. In language arts, 78% of the students grew at some point during the school year, so that could have been between the three tests that we did. And in writing, 88% of the students grew at some point. 53% of the students showed an overall growth from fall to spring. So in those two tests, 70% in writing showed an overall growth in fall to spring. Both classes, so the two teachers saw more growth from fall, winter, than winter to spring. As I was talking to some of the seventh grade teachers, so when we saw that big change in fall, from fall to winter, they believe it was due to testing fatigue in the springtime. So we ran right from CMAS tests right into MAP, and we do that every year. But, you know, kids were, I think, out of practice with use of computers and looking at some of those things, and it took a lot of time to get kids back focused into, you know, what school is when they've been off that first quarter, and sixth grade probably experienced some of that the most. They also feel that these numbers reflect the absences of our students, the kids who maybe were in remote and chose not to do some of the work and came back and then tried to get caught up on some things. So some of those affected, they believe, some of their overall scores in NWEA.
Are you talking about some of the kids that chose the online option and then came back?
Or? We didn't test the online kids for MAPS. So these were kids who had put on maybe one or two in the contact trace group.
Okay.
And we had some kids who chose not to do the work, or didn't do the work and have that direct instruction with the teacher. They didn't get on with synchronous learning to be a part of those classrooms. And for a lot of reasons they didn't, whether they didn't have internet capabilities that held the Zoom calls, or they just didn't, they didn't log in at the time. As we look at sixth grade, this is science. In science, we had quite a bit of change at the beginning of the year. We started with a teacher, Christy Banks, who had to relocate because of her husband's position, so they relocated back to Alabama. Kids loved her. We had a sub, we had another sub, and finally we got a full-time teacher in there about October, I think it was. And so they had a lot of change and transition with scores, but you can see in NWA for the springtime they still did fairly well. Look at language usage in sixth grade. Kids are right on target with writing, doing fairly well. We had a teacher in sixth grade reading that took a leave of absence this year for COVID. Her replacement came in and did a great job. We still see some work that we probably have to do in the red and orange there. But overall, we have kids pressing in green, blue, and yellow. Okay, so some strategies that we can address next year in these areas. Math, same thing. We have some red, but not as much as probably saw in a couple others. Screens. So I don't believe our kids lost as much as some other school districts probably did when they've gone to remote or hybrid learning or whatever their course of instruction was. In sixth grade, let me see what they said. For sixth grade in science, the students showed overall growth in their science scores from fall to spring. The average growth was 6 points, so that's a year's growth. And then 18 students grew over 10 points, so 2 years' growth. And then the highest growth was 18 points. And then we had some kids that lost 10 points from fall to winter, or fall to spring. Okay. One of the things that seventh grade language arts implemented was the 7 habits of highly effective teens, and had kids go through. Miss Neely is one of the teachers there. She said they're on their last section of the book, and they being the students have done well. She feels like many have grown into their character from the wisdom found in the book, and the author makes it very relatable to teens. I think this is something that probably could lend to HTI as we move in and trying to give kids skills that they'll use in the future. National Junior Honor Society participated in a lot of different activities for us, and right now they're in the process of screening applications and going to be recognizing students here in May that will be in National Junior Honor Society. They did a penny wars where they raised about $2,000 for the fire department, holiday hallway decorations. They did a pie day, and they did the raised money for certificates and induction things that go along with their program. They did a teachers versus eighth grade students kickball game. They gave that money to the Buddy Center in Castle Rock Giving Tree in conjunction with our counselors, and that helps to support some of our families in need over the holidays by bringing in items to get to them. They do the heart attack at the school and post signs around for teachers. They assisted the high school with a National Honor Junior Society creating COVID packs that went out to families. And then they always participate with our counselors in Red Ribbon Week. So they're a very, very active group. Still doing student council, working hard on some things. They were kind of impacted with us not being able to do a lot of things between grades and cohorting and different things along that line. They do a canned food drive, and they give that back to the Elizabeth Pantry. They do a lot of fundraisers around Thanksgivings. They did a St. Patrick's Day, Christmas. They provide meals and treats for teachers on Parent Teacher Conference Day and a Teacher Appreciation Week. They do a breakfast for them, and then they buy their t-shirts out of the funds they've raised. Our counselors do an incredible job recognizing students with Student of the Month. They go through these traits of pride, perseverance, respect, integrity, discipline, and excellence in the students. Or the teachers choose 2 students each month, a boy and a girl, that kind of wear those different qualities on them. And then they're recognized at a lunch in front of their classmates, given a certificate, and we will be celebrating all of our students of the month, which are 36 of them, on Wednesday with a Student of the Month breakfast. Kids like it. We post their pictures on the TVs in the cafeteria, so it's just kind of some recognition for our kids who are doing well. A lot of our teachers, you know, this was a difficult year, and I think what the school board, what the Superintendent Bissonnette did with making sure, and Marty, making sure we had the technology to keep our teachers up and running with kids that did go into remote, and, you know, I don't believe we had a lot of kids going to remote, and I think there was a large majority of those kids who did attend that were able to keep their grades up and on track. So, as stressful as it is for teachers to get the Zoom links out and trying to manage, I can't imagine trying to teach a Zoom class, teach to instruction or in-person instruction, and manage all those balls in the air at the same time. I think that our staff, I can speak to, did an incredible job communicating with parents and kids throughout the school year. You know, it's been a challenge, but they have risen and just did incredible. Love the staff that's at EMS. Questions?
Thank you. No. Thank you for all the hard work y'all have done.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'd like to thank you, but also your staff. We visited the board members, and I visited your school. And one of the things that struck in my mind when I think about those visits was how happy a place EMS is.
It really is.
Every time. And how happy the teachers are. They're grateful. They take care of each other. The students and the environment there is just so positive. And I would say, given the stresses of, you know, our world right now, was a kind of place of respite for the kids, where they could be kids. The environment was not overly restrictive. It had, you know, reasonable protocols. You all saw how the sixth graders are in the gym first, and then the seventh graders in the cafeteria. The way that the passing periods would work and how kind of efficient that was, how engaging the teachers were, and how engaged the students were in their own learning. And just the work of the counselors to deal with and help students who on any given day would struggle, how you would. I mean, and just the whole school year really went really smoothly for the middle school. And I know that you had the science teacher, you had challenges you had to overcome, but they were really more things that it seemed like they didn't stop you all in your tracks. And I think that, you know, your leadership made a huge difference in that. But the leadership over time, that the kind of professionalism and willingness to really work together to solve problems and kind of be in the shoes of your students and really understand them. And you know, I think that some of the results that you shared tonight about the MAPS testing or assessment, I guess, is better, really showed that they made, in many cases, a lot of really good progress. So.
I mean, teachers are either excited with their information when you ask for it. I'm excited to hopefully see what they do in CMAS. I know we had a great year a couple years ago, but I would be excited to see how they did this year with the number of kids that did test. So it's a great staff to be a part of. And I know Brett will come in and just continue with things and listen to them. And I think the transition will be good. I've met with him a couple times so far and involved him with some things. So I think it'll be a great transition for not only our teachers, but our kids and our parents and our community. I think he'll do a great job with them. Really do.
I agree.
Now, I love your little inspirational sayings that you painted on the walls. Yeah. That's really cool. Really, really cool.
A lot of that was, I know it's time, but it's really for the kids. The kids were so excited if you painted something outside their hallway. I just remember here in sixth grade when I did the last one down by their hallway, they're like, we finally got a painting. It wasn't really their painting, it was just outside their hallway that, you know, but it was.
It's all about that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so neat though. It's really cool that you did that.
You know, it's a cheap, it just takes time.
Yeah.
It doesn't take a whole
and
lot.
And talent. Because well, I couldn't do that.
I cheat on the talent part by using an overhead.
I still couldn't do it.
You've left some awfully big shoes to fill for Brett.
Yes,
I have no doubt he'll do his best to fill them, but you've been fantastic. You'll be missed. And thank you for everything you've done.
I appreciate that. Thank you, guys. I wouldn't be able to do it without Douglas believing in me, that I was the person to fill that role and, you know, taking a chance on somebody who's been in the district a long time and kind of moving up. So my thank goes to you guys for allowing the opportunity to do this. So thank you all.
We were happy.
It's been great. I love it. Sad to leave it.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
She not sad to leave
that. Did y'all catch that?
Yeah, but no more snow for you. So.
Oh, maybe.
Except for maybe on rare occasions. Rare occasions.
Don't ever know.
Yeah, don't forget about that ice storm.
I know. Yeah, that's true.
No,
Texas has
ice.
Not,
yes.
Yeah. I grew up in ice, not
they
snow.
They still have ice.
Everybody stays home, though.
Yeah.
Because they don't know how to drive in it.
We're excited, so it'll be a good change.
Well, best of luck to you.
Well, thank
you.
Yes,
thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thanks for everything you've done.
No, thank you, guys. All right. Thank you.
Okay, can I get a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion?
Thank you.
Roll call, please.
Dr. Frankendorf?
Yes.
Dr. Funkfeller?
Yes.
Dr. Gutenberg?
Aye.
Dr. Hines?
Aye.
Can I get a motion to approve the minutes from the board meeting of April 19th, 2021?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? Roll call, please.
Dr. Beckenberg?
Yes.
Dr. Frumkvöller?
Yes.
Dr. Gutenberg?
Aye.
Dr. Heinz?
Aye. Under communications, we have HR update with Ken Schumann.
Good evening, everybody. On your consent agenda tonight that you've already seen, I just wanted to talk a little bit for just a minute about what you'll be approving. The pay schedules, which were presented to you last meeting, there's been no changes to those schedules since you saw them last, and so those are up for you for your approval this evening. And then also our annual spreadsheets that eventually turn into contracts and notices of assignment that you'll be signing. Yeah, get ready.
Is that next meeting?
Probably not.
Okay.
Probably not.
There's still time to order stamps.
Well, I really shouldn't say that. There will be some here for the next meeting. But the next two meetings, really, hopefully we'll be able to split them up.
Okay.
Those spreadsheets have the names of all the individuals that we're asking to come back next year, and their salaries for next year based on the spreadsheets. If you approve the spreadsheets tonight, and if you approve the pay schedules tonight, our plan is to print those contracts and notices of assignment tomorrow and get them in the afternoon out to the schools, out to the departments, and so forth, and ask them to get them back signed as quickly as we can. Then we'll get them over to you for your signature. Yes, sir.
I don't know. I know for a fact neither of them were here. Can you explain why you do it kind of early and why it's important?
Yeah, we want employees to know that they're coming back next year, officially know that they're coming back next year. We don't want them to have doubts. We don't want them to wonder. So we tell them, yes, you are coming back next year as long as you want to be back, and here's what your new salary is going to be for next year. So it's something that we do for our employees to try to get this done as quickly as possible so they have confidence, they know what to look forward to ahead. A couple of events that are coming up. One is we're starting open enrollment now for our benefits for next year. We talked to you briefly a couple of meetings ago about our benefits for next year, that they hadn't changed very much at all, and that by and large, any increases we did have were relatively minor, so that was good news. Now, Tammy in our office is put out information today to all our employees about open enrollment, where they can go in and choose if they want to make any changes to their plans for next year. They can do that during this time period. So that's taking place starting actually later this week. And some of you probably know, but some of you may not know, that, you know, in addition to our regular benefits, our standard benefits that the district offers to our employees, we also have a company, American Fidelity, that has been partnering with the district for a number of years, that offers voluntary benefits to our employees. These are benefits that we don't offer, and most organizations don't. And American Fidelity then puts that program together. And so during all next week, they'll be in the schools at the departments, meeting with employees who are interested in signing up for voluntary benefits. It just as an example, and you've probably seen them, these maybe in some of the places that you've worked, accident insurance, cancer insurance, some whole life policies that they can get in, and other types of benefits that they can purchase themselves as employees. So they'll be in here next week. And then my final item is that Douglas is in the process of reviewing applications that I forwarded to him for Director of Communications. The ones that I forwarded to him, by and large, are people that have experience in the communications and marketing area, but also have a connection to education in some way. Some of them work for school districts, some of them have a connection in other ways. So we're taking a look at those, and hopefully in the near future we'll decide who we want to bring in for a process similar to what we did for the middle school principal. So that's moving forward. And that's it. Questions? All right.
No.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
I can't wait to give you guys the stacks to sign.
I can't wait to see them.
Yeah, they're going to be heavier because there's more money in them.
Awesome.
Carol and I will shake them out before it starts raining.
Yeah, the money falls out.
Right.
Thanks, Kim. All right. Moving on to technology update with Marty Silva.
Good evening, everyone. Let's see, just a couple things to update and to build on from what I shared with you last month. So I shared with you that we were in the market for purchasing another additional 400 Chromebooks. So I'll be putting out the request for proposal in that in the next couple of weeks. So the whole goal is to try to get it so that we can purchase right around the beginning of the fiscal year and get it delivered here if they're available. One thing that I'm going to change this year than I've done in the years past is to create 4 separate RFPs, one for each school, because a lot of the shortages, like if you ask for, you know, 500, they might say, oh, well, we have 100 of these models, and we have a, you know, and in this case, nowadays, it's really, there isn't that much difference between the models or of the Chromebooks or the manufacturers. 4 or 5 years ago, there weren't a lot of, maybe 1 or 2 of the manufacturers were making specific Chromebooks for education, meaning they were like a little bit more rugged, et cetera. And now pretty much Samsung, Dell, Lenovo, you know, any of the HP, all those companies make a specific Chromebook model that's specific to education that we can mix and match as long as we get a batch, right? We don't want to mix like a cart of computers or Chromebooks that's like half HP, half. So we'll put out the RFP in the next couple of weeks. The biggest one would be for the high school. So if you remember, our plan is to give the 9th graders brand new Chromebooks. That's assigned to them for as long as they're at the high school. And so that's about 175 Chromebooks. And so hopefully there'll be vendors out there that will have at least that much to provide to us. Because that one's really time sensitive because we have to pass them out at the beginning of the school year. Whereas the other ones, if they come in mid-year, we still have the old Chromebooks to continue to use and then be able to swap them out. So that's our plan. It's about 400 Chromebooks. And hopefully there'll be enough to at least purchase the ones for us. Some other new technology. So this year was kind of a freebie year for us for the MLO funding. Generally speaking, our MLO funding, of which is about $71,000 a year, 90% of that in the past couple of years before this year was spent on Chromebooks to ramp up our one-to-one program. And obviously with the COVID and the additional funding, we were able to buy all the Chromebooks that we needed this past year. And so that kind of freed up some money this year, so we were able to use the MLO funds for replacing an old lab at the high school for one, the graphics lab, Candace Tiger's lab. So that one we installed for her. We couldn't wait till summer to install it because she was having some issues. If you remember, she's also one of the people who has the certification program for Adobe, and we were having some technical issues with her old computers, and that seems to have resolved most of that. We've also gotten 10 new computers for the STEM program at the middle school. Using that funding, we've gotten around 67 iPads split between the two, Running Creek and Singing Hills Elementary, a little bit less for Running Creek. Running Creek also was able to purchase, with that funding, a podcasting broadcasting studio. So they're going to try that with their students over there. It'll be interesting to see how they come up with and what they come up with that product, with those devices. And then in the summer, we'll have the Chromebooks, and then we also have, via the HTF funding, we'll have a couple more labs, traditional desktop computer labs that we'll be replacing. We're currently in the midst of implementing a brand new work order system, which is nice for us. I know you probably think that we're going to have a work order system. But it's really...
it's going to be the world's best work order system, right?
But it's really tightly integrated with Google, and with Infinite Campus. So whereas a lot of that stuff with our old work order system, we had to manually get that data from somewhere. Now that it's tied in directly, so every time we add a new Google device in what's called the Google Administrative Console, it automatically gets added to our work order system. All the student and teacher information goes up to the work order system. So we could, if we wanted to,
have the teachers be able to submit work orders for their students, and it's all tied so they know exactly, you know, which student owns which Chromebook, etc., which right now we're doing manually in a manual process. And then in the future, if we needed to, it would have been useful this past year, but there is an ability to also give students and parents the ability to turn over orders so that in the future, if we have to do more remote learning, they can submit their own work orders instead of having to feed it through the school. So that's in the midst. We're trying to do that now. We're hoping for a go-live date of beginning of July, and then obviously we'll do training, etc., beginning of the school year for all the new teachers and all the returning teachers.
Does the Google system allow you to make a request for an Apple product?
Yes, we can allow that. No, it does. It does.
It's non-denominational in terms
yes.
of the kind of work orders it accepts.
Now, I must share with you, Douglas, that I asked Brett if he'd rather have a Mac or a PC, and he chose a PC.
Which Brett was that?
Brett Michael.
Okay.
Well, you know me, I won't hold that against you.
I won't.
And then our last thing that we do this year, and I think I shared with you last year, last meeting, is our tech survey that we do every year. So I've distributed that to our ETIC members. ETIC is our ESD Technology Innovation Committee, and so they're the ones who administer it. And so hopefully we'll get good participation from now, between now until the end of the school year, and then I'll report on the results of that in September, August, September, like I normally do, as part of my accountability process for myself and for our department. That's all I have. Any questions?
That's great. No.
Thanks, Marty. That's for all your work this year.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, next up, Chief Financial Officer, update with Ron.
All right.
Hi, Ron.
Hi there. Greetings. Good evening. Checks over 5,000. Most of the expenses fall into the category of typical monthly expenses, such as utilities, fuel, and food. Some of the other expenditures include payments for sped services, technology needs, professional development materials, online learning, a wall sign, and out-of-district tuition for special needs students. The reason on the checks over 5,000 list have where it shows under grants, ESSER-1, the amount is $31,506, and the actual cost was $55,950, is because that was the amount of money that we had a certain amount of money in the ESSER-1 grant. As you know, we have three ESSER grants, and I forget exactly, elementary, secondary school, emergency relief, I think is what the acronym means, is for that one we had a little bit under $100,000 to spend, and we used part of it for salaries. And then we also use part of it to pay for the online services. We had a finite number we could use. And so that's why that was the amount that was left over in the ESSER-1 to pay for the online. And we didn't know what the cost of the online invoice was going to be for the second semester. So that's why you have that. Why it shows $31,506, because that was what we put in the grant application. Because it's a budget that we put in there. We don't know what the number is going to be, and so we estimated that number. But we knew pretty much what the salary was going to be. So that's why you have that amount in there. Any questions regarding this? All right, moving on to the financial statements. These statements reflect activity through the end of March, or 75% of the way through the school year, fiscal year. There's been 71.2% collected of the general fund budget, or has been spent as a percentage of the general fund budget, and we've collected 64.5% of the budgeted revenues. A couple of the cost centers over the 75% benchmark, but overall we have 3.75. We are 3.75 under budget in the whole general fund. The remaining funds, the only one that needs to be closely monitored, and staff's opinion is for the balance of the year, is the food service fund. That's it for the financial statements. Any questions? I do want to explain something that Director Frundveller asked me a question on regarding why some of these changes, why there might be some more revenue that was collected in December more than what it is now. And I want to explain how that happens without trying to confuse you even more. I'm going to try and do my best to put it in layperson's terms. So, what happens is when the end of the year is June 30th. Sometimes we receive additional revenues after that cutoff date. Property taxes that were collected, but they were collected for the previous year, but we don't receive until July or August. Additionally, there are some accounts payable that we pay in July and August that should be attributable to the previous year. A good example, salaries. Salaries of certified and classified employees that are paid in July and August are actually attributable to the previous year. And so when we get ready for our audit, we put them as accounts receivable and accounts payable, but leave the expenses and the revenues in the year that they were actually paid and collected. Then we have to transmit all of this financial data, thousands of lines of data, to the Colorado Department of Education. They look at it, they then take it, and then if there's something, they have these certain codes that they, there are some algorithms that they have in their system, and if it doesn't match what their system says, it gets kicked back, and then we have to make a modification that it shouldn't have been accounted for in this using their codes. And there are 25-digit code that we have to use. And then also, they compare that information to our audit. After they've accepted all the data in December, we then go in either in January or February and make changes in our accounting system. That revenue collected in July and August that is attributable to the previous year then is reflected and taken out of this current fiscal year. And the same thing with the expenses. The expenses that were initially shown in this year are paid or goes back to the previous year. So that's sometimes why it looks a little odd in these financial statements. So just a little bit of trying to help you understand it without hopefully confusing you. So hopefully
have it. And go home and read up on gap accounting.
I also, before I get into a budget discussion, I want to let you know that there has been some issues with the food service with Legacy and their MOU, and they want to make some changes to the Memorandum of Understanding in regards to the food service. And once we have their request on changes to the MOU, we will get that to you. And hopefully there are not major changes, but there are some changes that they'd like to see made in that Memorandum of Understanding. So, I know we've already talked about salaries there. Ken's talked about salaries, but I just want to let you know that it's always tricky in trying to determine how much money we're going to have for salaries. It's incredibly tricky because, unfortunately, we don't know how much money that we're going to have to set aside or to use for salaries for the upcoming budget year, because the legislature usually doesn't conclude their session until the first or second week in May. This year, they're on schedule to end this legislative session in mid-June. So this year is significantly more tricky. And it's one of those things that we looked early on trying to, determine how much money we could have if the governor's budget if the final budget passed is fairly similar to what the governor's budget, the revised governor's budget from January, stays somewhat intact. Again, we don't know about that. We're not going to know the final numbers until June, what we're going to actually have to work with. But as we want to try and give the employees as much of the comfort level for the upcoming year as possible. So this was kind of a stretch, you know, this year, because we don't know exactly. Granted, we don't think a major pandemic's going to all of a sudden rear its head again and shut everything down, but so we feel a little bit more confident than we were, you know, at this time last year in terms of what we have to work with. So, but we need to make sure we also fairly compensate employees and get their contract to them in time. And just to let you know about the feeling of uncertainty, I belong to this Colorado Springs CFO group that meets, it used to meet in person once a month, now we meet once a month on Zoom, and we did a little poll about what are you doing about salaries? Are you going ahead with salary increases, or are you going to wait until the legislature, gives out the final budgetary numbers for revenues that we can work with this year. And in a 90-10 split, most of the Springs districts were waiting to see what the legislature was doing. There's a few people like us and Woodland Park and a few others that were going ahead. I think Manitou Springs went ahead and gave out salary increases or determined how much money they were going to have. So I just want to let you know that there was a lot of thought.
It's a big split.
To go ahead with this money. But fortunately, we do have a pretty good fund balance that we've been, you know, really conservative over the years and built it up, and, you know, for the rainy day we experienced this past year. Also want to tell you that we are all with all the different grants for ESSER and the money that's available out there. This latest grant that we're getting a little bit over $1 million, 20% is supposed to be earmarked for lost learning, to address lost learning. Unfortunately, we're not going to know. The application for this money didn't even become live until last week. And that was one of the things that you approved at the last board meeting was the assurances and transmittal letter for this application, because that has to be in by May 23rd. So we're going to have, we'll get that to them, but then we have to put together these huge narratives addressing allowability, allocability, and reasonableness of the expenditures of the money, and develop a plan how we're going to use this money for lost learning. And that's, you know, when I say 20%, that's obviously over $200,000. But we're not going to know if we've been accepted for that and for months down the road here. But to address lost learning, we'd like to address some of that this upcoming summer. And I guess we could possibly do that in terms of tutoring and some summer school and that. But the problem is, if we go ahead and use it out of our dime, then, and we don't get the funding for it, they don't agree that that's the best way to use these funds in their eyes, then we have to eat that cost. So I'm just trying to show you some of the behind the scenes thinking that has to go into this for these decisions. And the money is available, but not really. And here's a lot of strings, and they're still working on the type of strings that are going to be attached to this money. So it's a kind of an ever-changing working process for these grants. Okay, hopefully it was actually helpful. My monologue was here in the last 6 minutes, 7 minutes, 10 minutes. On to the budget discussion. For the time being, capital needs worksheet has been modified to reflect prioritizing from staff, and that includes talking. I went and talked to all the principals and office managers and the athletic directors, trying to get feedback on what the actual capital needs are for the school district, and I put on paper here. you know, processing, looking, trying to look at the big picture and what needs are, and that's what I've you know, got here in front of you. And one of the things that we took off the list from last time was we're requesting a small vehicle, and one of the small vehicles we have available, and it's in really bad shape. It's spewing carbon monoxide and that in the cab. And it's incredibly old. We took that off the list because we decided we're going to use one of our transportation's repair vehicle and put a plow on that. So that's why it went from two plows to three plows on here, because the plows one is totally unrepairable, and we also found with the ones we did have. With this last snowstorm, it was a nightmare trying to get everything done and getting lots ready for the following school day. So that's why that's on the list. Some of the other ones because we have such a short turnaround here and such a short time frame to get stuff done in the middle of the summer, and there's also become a lot of pent up demand with what individuals wanting projects done for their homes and that in other districts, we decided we need to start scheduling some work to be done, such as the EMS hot water heater. It is leaking, and we do not want to go a couple of weeks without a hot water heater in that school, and so we're going to go ahead. We've already scheduled that. Restriping and pothole repair, the lines are really a lot of places you can barely see them in the parking lots. We've also developed a lot of potholes. Not only, you know, you see them on the roads, but we also developed them in our parking lots that need to repair. The Shee playground resurfacing, it has become a safety issue, and so that's why we decided to get that done. And because of the difficulty of getting asphalt companies to come on out, we can't get them spur of the moment. So we have to schedule these things out. So
wasn't that one just done, the playground resurfacing? No. Or was that the preschool
preschool playground? There was some equipment that was purchased, and they moved the playground from the side of the building to the back of the building.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So that's what that was about.
I thought that was only a year and a half or 2 years ago. I was like, that should be under warranty.
Well, the preschool playground. Preschool playground was last summer.
Yeah,
that was
done
last summer.
Okay,
this is something completely different from that. We Marty wants some concrete over there by his building, and so he's tired of walking in the mud all the time, and so we had scheduled concrete over there by technology, and plus it's the right thing to do.
Yeah. It's a mess over there.
I don't know, mud boots work pretty well.
I was going to say, they got the sale going on right now.
Kidding.
That's why he wears high tops.
I know. Keeps the water out of your shoes.
Let's see here. We've purchased the carpet. We did schedule also the stair tread replacement, because we need to get that done also over at the high school, because we repaired it a few years ago, but it's really in bad condition.
Is that on both stairwells or just the one on the by the elevator?
No, it's in both.
Both? Okay. Yeah. I don't think I ever go to the one on the left, but I do know the one up by the elevator is awful.
Right. We've kind of kicked that can down the road by trying to do repairs, and it's time to get it done. And one of the things I really wanted to do this year, too, was we really kind of need to be on a replacement schedule for some of these, not only the HVAC units on the roof, but then also some of our food service equipment is seriously aging. You're getting a lot of miles on the equipment, and so that's why I wanted to start having replacements, and so we're not stuck without a dishwasher at a school or a refrigeration unit at a school and lose thousands of dollars worth of food. And so that's why I put on here the food service equipment replacement, originally wanted to put on their refrigeration units, but in talking to the director, she said that we needed the EMS dishwasher unit replaced more than we needed any refrigeration units or freezers replaced, but we haven't got that ordered. So those are the items right now that we have in process so far. Moving on, let's see, in the assumptions worksheet, moving on to the assumptions worksheet, we are anticipating a slight increase in the number of students attending the district next year. We feel, you know, this year was kind of an aberration. And even though I budgeted last year or this year for us to be down, I was, you know, I budgeted for being down, but I was hoping that we'd actually start seeing an increase. Yeah, well, those plans kind of went off to the side for reasons totally out of our control. But I really think that how many students we lost this year, we are going to increase. But it's still not a major increase, and so that's why I put down there the 28. And that's based on enrollment at this point in time, just moving from first grade, second grade, on and on and on.
We saw an increase in our actual enrollment in second semester over first semester, which is we were funded on first semester numbers.
Let's see here.
What was that number? Do you know? From first semester to second semester? I mean, 10, 20?
Yeah.
Somewhere around there? All the above?
Maybe. I think actually a little bit more.
Really?
Yeah.
More than 20?
Yeah.
So then you have those 20 for sure, unless they're all seniors, but most likely you'd have those 20.
So here's the problem, though. We don't know what our kindergarten's going to be. Right. And using preschool, you don't know. And so you need to be conservative about what you get from kindergarten. So that's...
The benefit is we are graduating one of the smaller classes that have graduated in a while. So hopefully those kindergarten classes coming in more than offset that graduating class.
That's what you hope for, but I mean, it's really, we don't know till...
Yeah, it's tough. I can only imagine.
We don't know till school starts.
Well, maybe Ron should have implemented a new enrollment process where they have to enroll before the year actually ends, and then your numbers can be done sooner for you.
But we could give them a discount for early enrollment.
There you go.
Go-go.
I like that.
So, it just to kind of also make sure you understand about the five-year averaging rule that we have to work with, too. Even if we do say we have an increase of 28 students from where we're at this year to next year, because we're on five-year averaging, more than likely the average or where we got funded this year is not we're not going to see the full additional amount of money from a 28 student increase, because we got funded at a higher number this year than what our actual enrollment is because of five-year average. So if we had, and I'm just going to throw it out, 2,100 students for this year, including legacy, and our enrollment, our five-year average, was 2,150, we're going to get funded at 2,150 versus the 2,800. So if our enrollment goes up by the 28 students, it's not going to go from 2,100 to 2,128, it's going to go from 2,150 to maybe 2,155 or 2,160. So we're only going to see a slight increase in our funding due to enrollment.
One way that it's rough to think about it is, if we increase by, say, I'll use a different number, 30, we might only see a funding increase equivalent to 15. So it's a rough way to think about it. It's at least or around half of the full amount.
You would expect that makes sense.
It's not precise. I mean, we the state runs the numbers for us, and then it's precise. But as a ballpark, you need to at least cut cut it in half. You can't just take the per pupil amount times that number of increase. You can't, and then you need to cut that in half. And that's rough.
But CDE did create a spreadsheet for each school district based on the current budget that the governor submitted back in January. They created a spreadsheet that I can plug in the numbers on our anticipated enrollment for the upcoming year, and that's where I get these numbers. The numbers were the projected program, and it says updated governor's budget, CDE spreadsheet. It says $19,000,436 over and above the $17,851 that we're receiving now. So it is a significant increase, but we also had a significant decrease last year. And so also the per pupil operating revenue is a significant increase of almost $900 there per student. But, and we also ate into our fund reserves this year to make sure we didn't have to modify our staffing levels. So, let's see. We do anticipate increases in the workers' compensation and property and liability insurance, which is reflected in the assumptions. There will not be an increase in the employer portion of PARA. There is going to be an increase in the employee portion of PARA for this upcoming year. We do anticipate increased SPED expenses. Again, I met with all the office managers, principals, and ADs to talk about their needs for next year. And the preliminary budget's going to be enclosed in your May 17th packet in 2 weeks.
Ron, I see it. Just help me understand. I see a $650,250 difference in CapEx from this sheet to this sheet.
So, this sheet here for the capital, that's the increase of what our capital budget is this year.
Got it. Okay. So some of this is built into what our budget
is this year.
Right.
It's just.
Got it.
We've already got a budget of capital items in the budget, and this is just the increase over that number right now.
Got it. Okay. So where I see. Okay.
And
that
I
helps.
Did it also because for some of the stuff that, like the HVAC replacements, I didn't include that in there too.
Right.
And that is because we're anticipating getting it funded from the ESSER II monies.
Right.
So that's why it doesn't match. I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's just my increase. And
that
and,
makes sense. I just didn't see increase after. So, got it. Makes total sense now.
And I know a couple of weeks ago I made a mental note because I saw the same thing, and it's like, make sure I bring that, I highlight that, and
okay.
My mental note didn't stick, and
I appreciate it. Thank you.
I never do either, so don't worry about it.
That's probably mental notes at this age.
In one ear and out the other.
Yeah.
Something shiny.
All right, I know that was more than 10 minutes, but
it's okay, we'll cut Douglas short.
She's kidding, Douglas.
I am kidding. Is that it?
You guys love to kid.
Oh, it's kind of fun sometimes. So is that it, Ron? Or
yeah, that's it. Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
questions? Any more questions? Okay. Okay, Douglas, up for superintendent update.
Did you just start a timer on your phone?
He always does.
Because I was gonna.
He always does. Now you just ate into 30 seconds.
That's because we messed with him so much.
I know.
I'm starting off.
Okay, you can go now.
Starting off.
Good job. Reset.
Ready, go.
Go.
I'd like to call your attention to the screen at the front of the room. That is the picture of the
Woo-hoo.
Elizabeth High School State Championship Gymnastics team.
That's awesome.
So,
way to go, girls.
That team includes all of these, I'm going to read their names. Two of the gymnasts were unable to participate in the state championships because of CHASA COVID restrictions. But I'm going to read everybody's name. Megan Montoya, Kaylee Bott, Bethany Breeks, Ellie Mowbray, Samantha Davidson, Emmy Dunn, Sydney Kissinger, Madison Montoya, Mira Lewinsky, Bria Hunley, Paisley Gamal, Courtney Togger, and Morgan Mortensen. Coaches Stacey Fulmer and Val Coppinger. One of the teams that competed, so this is 4A, which is, a lot of our teams are 3A, but they competed 4A. One of the teams is in a larger suburban district. They have one team for the district that has a number of high schools, and all of those high schools are larger than our high schools. So they have multiple larger high schools who come together to form one team.
Wow.
Competing against our team. And we had, just like many of the teams, were impacted with one or two students who couldn't be there. And it wasn't a toe point, slim margin that they won by. All of the teams there had to deal with last minute impact from COVID, including our team. But I think one of the reasons that Elizabeth High School has won so many state championships, and when they haven't come in second, when they've come in second or third, is because they are an incredibly strong team. Yep. And as much as gymnastics doesn't look like a team sport, it really is. The inspiration that the gymnasts provide to each other, the support, the encouragement, and when they don't score well, say early on in an event or in a whole event, the gymnasts know they've got to make it up somewhere else. And to win as a team is not just a collection of individuals. And they really make all of us proud and deserve more credit than we can give them, especially in this difficult environment that they've had to cope with. So anyway, that's amazing and wonderful.
It absolutely is.
The high school is going to be doing a celebration for them, I believe, next week.
Good.
A couple of the players that weren't able to compete also haven't been able to be back to school. And so the coach wants to do it when they can all be there, which absolutely makes sense because they got to state because of everybody's contribution.
Right.
So this week is Teacher Appreciation Week. So hopefully our teachers get lots of love from all over the place. They've done an amazing job this year. You saw them in action in your visits. You heard about what they've done. They've overcome a lot of challenges, including the initial challenges of uncertainty around risks, dealing with large numbers, especially at the high school, of students at any given time, I mean, not all the time, being remote. You know, who in their classrooms learning from home that day? And then the next day, well, maybe those same students aren't there, but there's some different students. It's been, it's a difficult challenge to teach in a normal environment, but this kind of dual mode of learning at school and learning at home has made teachers' job even more challenging, to say nothing of all the other things that they've had to cope with, both professionally and personally. You know, family members who have been ill or taking care of other things. So I don't know how. I think the best way was to show you what's going on in the schools, because I just don't think words really capture the work that they've done. And I think that without a doubt they've made us proud in what they do every day and how much they care about their students, which is why this really comes down to it. They don't do it for the board or for me or for the principal, or really even for the parents. They do it because they just have a genuine passion and care for the kids. And you can see it in all the things that they do. So really want to thank them. The I want to mention something that related to the salary schedules. The classified salary schedule has a job title called lead preschool teacher, and that's under the classified. It's not a licensed position as we have it now. With the passage of Proposition EE, which was funding from BAPE and so forth, right now there's a portion of that money that goes to rural schools, and we're a recipient of that. But after 3 years, that goes away, and the money goes into supporting preschool. And along with that will come new expectations, new regulations, and most likely a new agency. What that agency is called is not clear, but right now there's three agencies that have oversight over early childhood, including CDE and Human Services. So one of the things that we need to be paying attention to is how those expectations are changing. And one of the things is that we may need more preschool teachers, and we may need more highly qualified preschool teachers, more highly trained. And so what I proposed is that we spend the next year to really look at this issue and have discussion about it, and then consider next year some revisions to how we structure pay for preschool teachers. And there's different models out there. I think it's something that we need to take seriously and not be caught kind of flat-footed as the changes begin to take place statewide. So what most likely what it will look like is some opportunities for higher qualifications and higher pay relative to those higher qualifications. That could include being licensed in early childhood, could include an associate's degree, also in early childhood. Right now, you just have to have a lead teacher certification. So some of that will also translate into the ability for those teachers to contribute to curriculum development for preschool. Yes.
Along those lines, and I have firsthand knowledge because my mom was one of the teachers in the program, but Thompson R2J has a really good, what they call the Head Start program, and it is all pre-K, getting them ready and getting them in. So I'm not sure if you're looking for models to kind of follow or look at, but I do know that's a fantastic program.
Thanks, yeah, Thompson. And we've looked at some, and some of our staff have experience, so we'll just do that
okay.
Great. Systematically.
Yeah.
Let's see. In terms of our plans for next year, I want to keep it simple for now. That's a question that some people have brought up. So I'm not talking about the summer, but next school year. Are a couple of important considerations are, one, that we would, just like this year, we would not be entertaining any kind of hybrid model or flexible model or cohorting like other districts have done that we have not done. We would continue to build on what we've done this year. Another question that's come up is masks. I can say we don't know, and it just doesn't make a lot of sense to speculate when we don't know. We have been very clear that if there is an executive order, we are required to follow that executive order. That is different than, say, for example, public health guidance that may be outside of the realm of an executive order. And so we'll just cross that bridge when we get to it. But hopefully we'll see the ability to have more activities at school. Assemblies, after school activities, clubs, and that sort of thing. The capacity limits for events are continuing to increase, and the restrictions, especially when things are outdoor, are continuing to be fewer. With regards to offering a 100% online learning option, my recommendation is that we do not offer that. There are clearly some students who prefer that. The reality is there's lots of options for those students, and it's not clear that the option that we could provide would be the best for any student. We are a relatively small district that can't be everything for everybody. And what we've seen, and you heard it in Pam's report tonight, is that in-person learning produces positive results academically and socially for students. That's what we're good at, that's what we've invested in, and that next year, that would be our main programmatic offering. And we would have the ability to have individual students shift temporarily to remote if there are still health protocols in place where we need to exclude students on a short-term basis from in-person learning because of health reasons. But we would have that capability. Hopefully, it would be a minimum number of students. And that's partly why, along with 11 other superintendents, I wrote a letter to CDPHE, or I signed on to a letter to CDPHE and the governor, saying that we should stop the school quarantines now. And the main reason for that is there is strong evidence that there's very little spread of the virus in schools. Schools have been one of the safest places for students to be. According to the data from these 13 districts that signed on, their COVID infection rate has been less than 0.2%. I think that even to just be slightly more conservative, we could say less than 0.5%, meaning that 99.5% of the students that we've sent home because of exposure have not gotten the virus. You can count on one hand, with evidence, the number of students in our school system who've gotten the virus from the school. There are questions about, especially recently, where did students get the virus, but where the combination of public health and our staff have done extensive contact tracing and made every effort to understand who was exposed, how, where, when, why. There's only a handful where we can say we are sure that you got it at schools. Less than 0.5%. So who would get excluded if you didn't quarantine? Well, the students who tested positive. But that kind of makes sense, even in a non-COVID. You're sick, you should stay home. So even though the numbers are up in the state and up in Elbert County from a couple of months ago, that's what increases the number of students who come into our schools with the virus. But the ability of our schools to maintain a healthy environment, regardless of the level of COVID spread in our community, is a testament to our ability to keep students safe. So, reflecting back on the last 2 weeks and our last meeting, and the decision to stay in person, despite an uptick that was related to the prom and all of the community as well as school activities related to prom, we saw in the 2 weeks prior to prom, we had two students who came into the school with the virus. The week after prom, we saw approximately 15. This last week, according to data that was sent to me by the high school, I'm not sure that we have any, but I've also heard that there could be one or two. So there was a steep uptick in the week and a half or so following prom. So what caused that? Well, we don't know exactly, but what we do know with a lot of information is there was a lot going on. There were gatherings before the prom, there were gatherings after the prom, there were students going, sharing rides, smaller vehicles, larger vehicles to the prom. There was lots of preparation for the prom where students were together in the car, traveling around. There were so many opportunities for students to be spreading the virus in that period leading up to and after the prom. And we don't know, and we can't know. And public health and our nurse can't know where most of those students caught the virus. But what's been good is that we've seen the numbers come down, and we expect them to continue to go down, if not be back to the pace that we had before the prom. There was just this steep uptick related to the prom, and so I believe that the decision to stay in person was absolutely, without a single doubt, the right thing to do. When you think about 630 students' lives being affected, it just doesn't make sense to say you can't come to school, you have to not be involved in any activities, and for a health reason, when we know from evidence that students are safer at school than almost any other place. And they've been getting the virus in the community, not in schools.
Right.
So to send them out of the school into the community is putting them more at risk. Okay, so it's just illogical to make that decision. So I know that there have been questions and discussion in the community about it. And thankfully, the vast majority of our parents understand and agree. But as you know, the decision was one that I initially made and had to make essentially alone on a Sunday, because we were given kind of ultimatum by public health that unless we announced a closure by 5 o'clock, that they would make an announcement. And so I informed you of my actions and asked you to consider it on that Monday night following at your board meeting, and I appreciate your consideration of that, and I believe that there was no other better approach to take. And just being in the schools, especially in the high school, repeatedly over the last 2 weeks, it makes it abundantly clear when you see the social interaction, what teachers are doing, the activities, all of the things that are happening. It would have just been heartbreaking to have basically put all of those things on any kind of a hold, even a day or two. So the last thing that I wanted to mention was that was the last thing.
I do have a question. I'm going to extend his time.
You're fine.
A little bit.
I know.
I know that, and I appreciate you and the other superintendents sending that letter to CDPHE. I also saw it on Fox News on their website and read it, and it was a very scaled down version of what was sent. Have you received any feedback?
Yes. Yeah.
Can you share it?
There.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess I didn't. I thought that was the letter you had sent. Okay.
And page 2 is the letter of their response.
I didn't go far enough. Thank you.
So go ahead. I'm not happy to answer any questions, but yeah, their response was basically no.
Okay.
Numbers are going up. More kids are getting it. And the outbreak information is just really unreliable. I mean, if you know what's going on in particular schools and you look at the outbreak data, it just doesn't correspond. So there's little teeny outbreaks, 2 students in a school that show up on the outbreak data, and then there's other schools that have over 100 cases of positive cases,
right,
over the course of 2 weeks that haven't closed or been declared an outbreak. But regardless of whether it's 2 or 100, there's just been very little spread in schools.
I agree. Okay.
So
that's
where I think the public health response was really disappointing, because any aware and sensitive person could be, all you have to do is look around and go to a Chipotle restaurant,
right,
near a high school. Go any place, go to a Target, go to any place where teenagers or young people hang out, and you will see what they're doing, or talk to their parents about what they're doing. They are socializing without masks, in closed settings,
yeah,
without this information.
Agree.
And to say that that closing a school or sending kids out of school is going to actually decrease the spread is ignoring the reality of the life of a teenager.
Yes, it is.
And adding more challenge to what's very stressful for them and doesn't improve. I understand why their numbers and their graphs and their charts, right? And they feel justified in looking at that part of the data. But what they don't have the systems to do, and they haven't shown the courage to do, is to look at the bigger picture.
Right.
And they don't, I get it, they don't get any points for being more lenient. They don't get a pat on the back for that. It's all risk for them. It's all downside. So school boards, school leaders are the ones who need to balance and think about the public health guidance and then balance the interests of parents and students in the education, both the academic and the social emotional learning with safety, and especially with the opportunity to get vaccinated for the adults in our schools. Every adult in our school system has had the opportunity to get vaccinated, and I believe that everybody that wanted to get vaccinated has gotten it, has been past their 2 weeks, past their second vaccine. They got the double dose.
Thank you for your leadership and all that, and for recognizing the importance of the kids and the parents and their well-being, other than just their physical health, because you know they're safe in the school. So their physical health, too, being in the schools, rather than being in each other's basements playing video games for 2 weeks or whatever else they would do.
Right.
I know it's much appreciated by a lot of people in the community.
Thank you.
Is that it? Okay. Any more questions?
No.
Okay. On to public comment. No public comment. Okay. Consent agenda. Can I get a motion to approve items 9.1 through 9.11?
So, second.
Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Frumkeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Haynes?
Aye. Action items, can I get a motion to approve item 10.1, disposition of district property?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion?
No.
Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Frumkeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Haynes?
Aye. Can I get a motion to approve item 10.2, intent to participate, / designated election official for November 2, 2021 election?
So moved.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
I understand we're designating.
Right.
Are we I wanted to make sure.
So
Kristen
will.
Kristen Harris will be the. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I know you're looking forward to it.
I just wanted to make sure it was okay.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Frumkeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Haynes?
Aye. On to 10.3, first and final revised policy readings. Can I get a motion to approve FB-facilities planning?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Frumkeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Haynes?
Aye. Can I get a motion to approve 10.4, FB-R, Facilities Planning Regulation?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion?
No.
Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Frumkeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Haynes?
Aye. On to discussion items. BOE meeting schedule for 21-22. Do we have it?
I didn't see it here.
It's in the packet.
It shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah, it should be the same thing.
Are there any notable changes?
Okay.
So, have we had
good
any
with
comments?
It? No.
Okay.
No problem here.
Move on to BOE planning. Next board meeting is May 17th.
All good.
Okay. And that May 17th, on that meeting, as required by law, the CFO will present the preliminary budget.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have to post, we have to announce it in, posted, and how would you say it? We have to publicly announce it.
Every year I get a notice, a publication for one of the new Elbert County News, and I think, Paula, you've signed it the last couple of years.
Yep.
Put it in there, and we get it, yeah.
Okay. And that's good enough, as long as it's in a publication.
No, we post it outside here, too.
Right.
Right.
But, yeah. Okay. It's just such a small circulation population for that news.
That's what we got. That's rural Colorado.
Yeah, I know it. Okay.
Okay. Anything else?
No.
Okay. We have no executive session. So with that, I will adjourn this meeting at 7:26 p.m.
Wow.